You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today, we're in La Caverne du Pont d'Arc.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And we're joined again by Francois Thomazeau.
Hello. No, it's a nice area.
Beautiful area, isn't it? Lavender fields, beautiful.
Ideal for cycling.
Oh, wonderful. But very, very windy, and that was a factor in today's stage. It's been a strange day on the Tour de France. We'll talk about that in a moment, but first of all, let's have... The race did go on, and let's have the tale of the étape.
Okay, thank you, Richard. Yes, stage 13, an individual time trial from Bourges-Saint-Andéol to La Caverne du Pont d'Arc, 37.5 kilometres, and it was, as you say, Richard, very windy out on the course, very rolling, with most of the climbing in the first half of the course. Perhaps not a surprise that Tom Dumoulin won, and he won convincingly by over a minute. He was ahead of Chris Froome. Nelson Oliveira, the Portuguese rider with Movistar, was third. Jerome Coppel of France was fourth, and Rohan Dennis was fifth. Surprisingly not so good for Tony Martin, who was ninth, and Fabian Cancellara, who was 23rd, former world individual time trial champions. Of the top 10, the outstanding performances were Adam Yates, who lost only 1:58 to Chris Froome, and Bauke Mollema, who lost only 51 seconds. But Chris Froome has strengthened his grip on the yellow jersey. Peter Sagan is still in green. Thomas De Gendt is still in the polka dots, and Adam Yates is now convincingly in the white jersey.
Well, we'll hear later on from Bauke Mollema, from Adam Yates and Wout Poels. We'll also hear from some of the sports directors, Marc Sergent, Valerio Piva, and also Laurens ten Dam, the rider. We spoke to some of these guys about the stage, and some of them about the drama on Mont Ventoux and whether the correct decision was taken. We'll talk a bit about that as well coming up. We should talk first about what an awful 24 hours for France, and the question this morning of whether the stage would go on. And there were two issues, I suppose. One was respect for the victims of the terrible terrorist attack in Nice, and the other was security. The Tour is obviously vulnerable, but also the security services, the police that the Tour relies on so heavily, that line the route and make sure starts and finishes are secure. And we have been talking the last couple of days about the increased security on the Tour. There are certainly more police in Montpellier. It was Bastille Day, and you know, that was also a factor perhaps in this terrible attack. But Francois, it's been a very strange day, and have you ever experienced that before on your many tours?
Yeah, well, once actually I can remember was the day after Fabio Casartelli died. The next day there was no stage. You know, the stage was cancelled, and everybody was in shock, because that's not very, very often, fortunately, that a rider dies on the Tour de France. So, of course, what happened yesterday is much more horrific than the death of just one person, you know, doing his job as a bike rider. But that's the only instance I can remember of a stage being, not only talk of the stage being cancelled, but a stage being actually cancelled. I remember the day after Lance Armstrong won the stage in Limoges and pointed to the sky in homage to Casartelli. It was dreadful, but today was a little bit different, and I think that the organizers were in two minds. Christian Prudhomme said something interesting. He said that they really asked themselves whether to cancel the stage, which is a bit strange in the sense that since we've had terror attacks in France, and we've had far too many now, you know, the reaction of the authorities has always been, or most of the time, it has been to say life must go on. You know, the show must go on. If we yield to the terrorists, then they've won. You know, and I think that part of the decision today was we've known from the start that there's danger, there's a threat around the Tour, that the Tour is vulnerable, and that someday it might happen that we have a terror attack on the Tour, but the threat is not stronger now than it was yesterday, and the decision was for the race to go on. Most riders, you know, you could see felt very emotional about it today. Romain Bardet was saying he couldn't sleep. Tom Dumoulin had really, you know, emotional words about it. Even Chris Froome, I mean, he only spoke, you know, about one sentence about the what happened yesterday in his press conference. So everybody was moved about it. But maybe the best way to counter a terror attack is keep on doing what you do best. If you're a musician, play music. If you're a rider, ride your bike. I think that's probably the way to handle the situation best.
Well, Froome lives just along the coast, of course, in Monaco, as a lot of riders do, and a lot of riders, of course, who live in Nice as well, a lot of the American riders. So for them particularly, and I think Froome was pretty moved by what happened. It was such a strange day, though. It was a flat sort of atmosphere. It was more difficult for people to get to the course because there was more security around it. It also came just after the sporting drama, really, although, you know, that involved some unruliness in the crowd on Mont Ventoux. So it was odd, wasn't it, coming just after that as well?
Yeah, but I do think the tour organisers handled it very well. There was a sombre atmosphere, a respectful atmosphere. The publicity caravan fell silent.
Well, I wondered why it ran at all, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it's part of the tour, isn't it? As Francois says, the show goes on. But you know, there was a mark of respect. A lot of the riders had black armbands. I noticed Adam Yates had a black armband on his white jersey this evening, and the podium presentations were very subdued and struck the right tone, really. I mean, as you say, sport really is almost irrelevant in the immediate aftermath of something like this attack, and yet it's interwoven into our culture, isn't it? It's what people do. It's a Friday after Bastille Day. I don't know whether people would be back to work today or off work, but the Tour de France is part of the French summer.
It's a symbol, isn't it, of France? Well, it's more than a sporting event, and so, and again, that's what we always think makes it uniquely vulnerable, you know. But it's so identified with France itself, the country, the culture.
Absolutely, and so I think the show had to go on. You know, where do you draw the line? In what circumstances could the decision have been different? Perhaps if we were closer to Nice, I don't know. But I think if the stage had been cancelled, you basically say we're giving up on you know, all of the things that are held dearly in the country, I guess.
Christian Prudhomme, you know, the tour director, he says very often, and he said it again today, that the only thing that stopped the tour was the two world wars. So, in a way, to stop the tour today would have meant accepting that this is a third world war, which it might be, but it's not quite. So, the fact that the stage was not cancelled is also a way to say, no, this is not a third world war. The tour will go on because, you know, only a major conflict can stop it, and the tour is stronger than that. I know there's been a long debate. I mean, there was a meeting at the town hall of the Bourg Saint-Andéol with the prefect, all the authorities, the minister of the equivalent of the Home Office. It took a long time to decide. I talked this morning to the policeman in charge of the security on the tour, called Eric Luzet, and he said that they already had lots of people on the course. There are 23,000 gendarmes along the road of the tour, along the tour. And today there were more than 600 policemen around the course. And he said that they readjusted that their security system to face the new threat. And I think that there was a threat already. It had been taken care of, but after what happened, I think probably the tour is even more secure than it was before when we started in Normandy, you know.
And security issues related to the race are certainly high on the agenda as well. Christian Prudhomme has just walked past us. In fact, there's a reception, an official reception happening right beside us. So apologies if there's a bit of noise wafting over from there. There was a round of applause there a minute
there
ago.
There was. That was for Francois' very statesmanlike analysis of the situation.
We were actually drinking their wine as well, but that was after we'd helped ourselves to three glasses, we were told it was not for the press, but for the officials, but never mind. The stage did go ahead, and it was a crucial stage, you know, and it would have had an impact, perhaps, on the race, a big impact on the race, had it not gone ahead, because it was the only long time trial, a very difficult time trial. And you said, Lionel, that Dumoulin wasn't as a surprise he won. I think it was a surprise he won by so much, and it wasn't. We played a little interview with him last night where he talked about this stage, about how difficult it was. You know, it started with a long climb, and I think he showed again today that he is, you know, he's riding this tour, obviously, for stage. That's his second stage win in very different terrain. He's a very talented rider. We've been very impressed with him as a, you know, very eloquent speaker as well. But that was a huge statement today, I think.
It was, yeah. And he made the point in the press conference, didn't he, that if he was riding for the GC, he wouldn't have been able to win by that much time, because he's been able to save his legs a bit on the days that he's not targeting. He's able to really focus on very specific stages, and today obviously was one of them. And that asks the question, really, Rowan Dennis, Tony Martin, Fabian Cancellara, really quite a long way off. They should have had the same sort of advantage over the GC riders, but it didn't work out that way.
You remember you asked me at the end of last year who was my favorite rider of the 2015, and I said Tom Dumoulin. I was very impressed by him in the Vuelta. He won two mountain stages, and I think this guy in the future is the same type of rider as Jacques Anquetil or Miguel Indurain. He's a time trialist who can become a Grand Tour winner. He's cute. He's a nice guy. He speaks very good English. He's intelligent. He really belongs to this new category of riders like Peter Sagan. Romain Bardet, all this new generation, the class of 1990, you know, and I really like this guy. I think that, and you know what, in French, Dumoulin means windmill. It was quite appropriate today, don't you think?
I also like, he's intelligent, but he's also very straight. He generally gives a very straight answer to a question. He was asked today, does this make you the favourite for the time trial in Rio? And he paused and he said, I think it does.
Yeah. which shows his confidence.
Refreshing
as well.
Honesty, mm-hmm. Because a lot of people would fudge that and say, well, you know, there's all these other guys. You know, Froome is targeting that as well. But that was a convincing beating of Froome. Now, admittedly, Froome went for a little jog yesterday, so his legs might have been a bit sore. But but still, it was impressive.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
And now, Pédaleur du Charme.
Thank you very much to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast and sponsoring our Pédaleur du Charme award. We haven't even thought about Pédaleur du Charme today. Didn't really seem like the right thing to do, so we don't have a Pédaleur du Charme today, though we did announce two last night, one for Mark Cavendish, one for Chris Froome. The Mark Cavendish one proved controversial because I said it was for getting bottles from the car for his teammates, and a few people pointed out that I didn't consider Andrew Greipel for that award a few days ago because he'd done on the basis that that's his job. I have to say that the other reason for not giving it to Greipel was that he got it last year.
Ah, I see. Yeah,
and he wasn't a very gracious recipient of it, was he? Really?
Not
Greipel.
Terribly. No. The jury has spoken.
Once bitten, twice shy.
The jury has spoken.
Well, Pédaleur du Charme will resume tomorrow. Did manage to get a Pédaleur du Charme T-shirt to Mark Cavendish, so we'll post that picture tomorrow. Chris Froome is winging its way to Chris Froome.
Well, mentioning the jury of the Pédaleur du Charme, the Tour de France jury and the UCI commissaires had a heck of a job to do at Chalet Reynard yesterday, didn't they? Francois, what was your take on the whole incident that unfolded on 112?
I mean, it's one of the most extraordinary things I've ever seen on the Tour de France. I mean, what happened to Chris Froome? I mean, all of a sudden, we were all, you know, in the press room. It was unreal, because obviously the camera went blank, and at the end of this blank moment you had the impression, remember the Twilight Zone that all we've taken control of your TV set or something, they said at first, and that was the impression you had, that all of a sudden we'd got into the Twilight Zone, you know, because you had a cycle race, and all of a sudden you have the guy, you know, in his yellow jersey running up the mountain with the number one on his back, and the, you know, the bemused crowd watching this.
Didn't know what was happening.
I mean, it was absolutely, and especially the most striking thing was there was no bike. It had gone, you know, and there was no at first, you know, no notion of where it was. So, that was the first impression. Then, of course, there was a controversy: should Chris Froome still be wearing the yellow jersey or not, or whatever. I'm in two minds about that. I think that we can discuss the rules. I'm not a specialist enough. I don't have the UCI rules PDF on my computer, and I can't check every single point, you know. So, and I suppose we're all the same. But I suppose that if they took the decision, it was, you know, when the referee decides, you should always respect the referee's decision. And if you sports-wise, it's obvious that yesterday Chris Froome, Bauke Mollema and Richie Porte were the best men in the bunch, and it would have been absolutely absurd to see Nairo Quintana, who showed nothing at all yesterday, nothing at all today, and nothing at all since the tour started, to see this guy in front of them. The only little detail we could have, the little problem, is Bauke Mollema. He had managed to sneak through this mess and gain time, and I can understand he was a little bit furious last night.
Well, looking at it, there were 23 seconds ahead, roughly, when the incident happened. Mollema finished 19 seconds ahead of Adam Yates, who was first again of the leading group behind. And you think, well, Mollema was on the ground, he got back up and he got going again, and he had still 19 seconds. That suggests to me that they would have had more than 23 seconds on the line. Now, we've had a bit of correspondence from people, you know, Facebook messages and emails, from people saying Froome should be disqualified because he has not covered the whole course on a bike. Now, But that assumes that he gained some kind of advantage by running, I think. And to me, it would be absurd to penalise Froome for what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand it being a talking point, and technically, you know, the rule is that you have to cross the line with your bike, you have to cover the whole course with your bike, and there was a period when he was running between the point where he'd lent his Pinarello against a motorbike, I think, and collected the Maverick neutral service bike. But I have to say, it kind of surprised me a bit, because up there at Chalet Reynard, absolutely no one, this was not on the agenda at all. No one was saying, oh, is there going to be a controversy about, Chris Froome getting in trouble for not covering the course on his bike. I mean, that was so far down the agenda, so far down the list of priorities for the tour organisers and the jury, I would suggest. No one I spoke to was even, you know, it didn't cross anybody's minds actually up there. I'm sure in the kind of cool, calm moment, people watching from afar perhaps, you know, thinking, well, the rule is the rule, surely they should adhere to that rule. I think in the sort of the heat of the moment, it would have been utterly absurd to have penalised Chris Froome for that incident, because he, you know, yes, he panicked. You can argue whether it would have been more efficient for him to just wait and get a bike, or
it would have been better for him to run back down the hill towards a bike. Sure. Yeah. Coming, that would have been better.
My impression is that that there were three major points that made this decision happen. Because first of all, the organizers, you know, there was obviously a mistake by the organizers. The way that no barriers were there, so they said that because of the wind, you know, the barriers couldn't stand, and they were forced to remove them. But obviously, there was something, you know, there was a blunder by the organizers. So, secondly, the motorbike that, you know, that they ran into, that Richie Porte hits, was a France Television motorbike, and France Television ruled the show. They run this race. Okay, that's the second point. And third, you have the yellow jersey. That's, you know, you know, the only robe, you know, there's something you can't touch, it's untouchable. So yeah, the three things that made my impression is that the commissaires and the organizers, they wanted to make believe nothing had happened. And if you want to erase all that and say, okay, let's do as if nothing had happened, the only decision you can make is to say, okay, the race stopped at that very moment, and everything that happened afterwards, you didn't see.
You mentioned there the organisers, they had to act very quickly overnight to take down and then reconstruct the entire Tour de France 6 kilometres down the mountain. The only other alternative would be to say, we're not running the stage, the wind is too high, we're going to cancel the stage, because they haven't got the infrastructure to suddenly recreate the Tour de France in the time available. It clearly wasn't possible. Had it been possible, they would have done so, I'm sure. But we did have a very interesting email in from a listener called Floyd Milligan, and his idea was really quite innovative, and it caught our attention, didn't it, Rich, when we read it? Because the issue is the number of people on the mountain and all getting so close to the riders, narrowing the road down to really a bike length. And his idea... Sorry, a bike width, of course. His idea was that advanced of the race the day before, some kind of vehicle goes up and paints tram lines on the road basically denoting the racing zone. So however wide that would be, I don't know, the width of a car plus a little bit more.
It will work in England because you're a disciplined nation.
surely, Francois, the rule of the crowd would come into play, and there would be an element of self-policing, because everyone would then know where the line is. And anyone who's over the line could be brought back into check. It would give the gendarmes something to say, hey, you're over the line, you're out. They could slowly change it, because this isn't a logistical issue, this is a cultural issue, and that's, I think we've had a couple of points from people.
We're one of the guys who helps us on the podcast, Paul Shafter, called me this morning, and he said that it doesn't happen at the Flanders Classics, where you have as many people drinking as much, arguably. You know, alcohol is certainly part of the culture there in terms of going out and enjoying the race, but there isn't the same issue of packing the road, getting in the rider's way, running alongside the riders, interfering with the action. That doesn't happen at those races, whereas it does happen at the Tour de France uniquely. And we always sort of put it down to the size of the crowd, but is that the issue, or is it a cultural phenomenon? And I think that's a really excellent idea.
Oh, I mean,
win caused a major accident in the cycling podcast. My glass of red wine just spilled over the table.
Hang on, what's that noise? Sounds like the Freeboss file, our old comrade Daniel Freeb. I hope he's not going to mention his contact lenses again.
Good evening, chaps. And it's good to be back, in fact, after my enforced 2 or 3 day hiatus. I specify enforced because I have actually been ill again. Always happens in the Tour de France. This year it was food poisoning. Haven't actually been able to eat for 3 or 4 days. I know what mental and physical resources it requires to be on the podcast, so I didn't feel that I could do myself justice. Oh my word, what is that noise? Oh, it's the Rye television lorry being deflated. Anyway, here I am. I'm back and I am fighting fit, and I'm going to deliver 3 or 4 conclusions from today's time trial. First one, Movistar have almost conceded defeat in this Tour de France. Had a few conversations today, or had a couple of conversations with their team manager, Eusebio Unzué. He's very defeatist, he's very pessimistic about their chances and Nairo Quintana's chances of getting back into the fight for the yellow jersey at this Tour de France. Quintana lost more minutes today. He did a reasonable time trial, a respectable time trial, but Unzué feels that everything they've thrown at Team Sky so far has been batted back with interest, and that will probably continue to be the case, because Team Sky seems to be operating their rotational policy again, where they use different domestiques for different parts of the race, and they've got a few guys waiting in the wings to ride very strongly, I think, in the final week. Walt Powers is one of them. I think Mikel Landa might be another. So Unzué is not very hopeful of Nairo Quintana turning this around. Second conclusion, Bauke Mollema is the Steven Kruijswijk of this Tour de France. Steven Kruijswijk, of course, is the byword now for the dark horse who really surprises everyone in a Grand Tour. After what Kruijswijk did at the Giro d'Italia, I think that Mollema might even outdo him here. Mollema is very much in contention for podium place now, and might even prove to be Chris Froome's closest challenger and toughest opponent in the Alps. I think the Alpine stages might suit Mollema. They're quite short, quite punchy. He's got the experience now of having tried to finish on the Tour de France podium and failed. I think he's more mature now. He's in a different team. He doesn't have quite the media scrutiny in an American team as he did in a Dutch team when he was riding for Blanco and prior to that Rabobank. So all looking good for him. Final conclusion is that the subplot that people are not paying enough attention to at this Tour de France is the, I wouldn't say it's a cold war, but I would say that the internal, I wouldn't even say it's rivalry, but the kind of binary path that BMC is on with TJ Van Garderen and Richie Porte. Very interesting to observe their body language at the moment. I watched them come in after their time trials. They retreated to opposite sides of the warm down cordon or paddock that BMC had set up. And I wouldn't say there was tension or terseness in the air, but I wouldn't say that they're best buds either, and they're right behind each other. I think the situation there at the moment is still very vague, and BMC still don't really know who their strongest rider is. Quite different characters, I think, Van Garderen and Port, and it'll be interesting to see how that one develops over the last couple of days. My evening from this point is going to develop towards, as I said earlier, first meal for a while. So I'm quite looking forward to that. I know that food poisoning for Lionel must be a fate worse than death. I've been a lot more sanguine about it, a lot more phlegmatic about it. Nonetheless, I'm quite looking forward to chowing down this evening. Also looking forward to seeing you guys. Richard, looking forward to getting my contact lenses. What are we now? It's almost the end of week two, still not got them. Come on, sort yourselves out.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Whoever you are, wherever you ride, whatever the reason, Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses and communities all over the world. See rafa.cc for more information.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring us at the Tour de France. Wonderful partners that they are. Do follow their alternative coverage of the Tour de France at rafa.cc, our hashtag more than race on Twitter. Every day, something fascinating there. Unfortunately, Francois is so disappointed by his spilling his red wine that he's just left. He's done a Giro and done a runner. No, he had to leave. He had to leave us, unfortunately. But lovely to have his input, and we'll have him back again.
Just a couple of points from yesterday before we move on to today, Rich. You wanted to say something about Nairo Quintana.
Well, footage. I mean, we explained last night how tricky yesterday was. I mean, Francois was in the press room, so he saw a lot more of the stage than we did. It was very challenging up the mountain to see what was going on. There weren't TV screens. There was no phone signal or Wi-Fi or anything. So, you know, our little discussion about the incident involving Movistar and Sky, for example, when there was a crash at around, I believe, around 30 kilometres from the finish, involving Luke Rowe and Ian Stannard, and Chris Froome stopped for a call of nature, and Fabian Cancellara apparently remonstrated with Valverde at the front of the bunch. Now, that would have been a massive talking point had the incident on Vontoux not happened, because yes, it's etiquette for the bunch to slow down when the yellow jersey stops to answer the call of nature, but not in the last 30 Ks. So that was an odd one, and I think maybe a question that needs to be asked of Chris Froome at some point. You know, I think the bunch waits for the yellow jersey. If he crashes, he doesn't wait. They don't wait for his teammates. So that was an odd one, and you know, I say we didn't see it, so it's difficult for us to have covered it in any kind of authoritative fashion. But we'll continue to sort of follow up on that one in particular, because there is a bit of needle between Movistar and Team Sky, that's for sure. The other incident that emerged today on footage that was posted on social media was of Nairo Quintana holding onto the Mavic motorbike, one of the wheels on the Mavic sort of neutral service motorbike, as it weaved its way, negotiated through the crash that involved Froome, Mollema and Richie Porte. It's very clear Quintana is holding on to the motorbike. Now, I am inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt that he was doing it in order to avoid stopping and just to get through the mess. We don't know how long he held on to the bike for. That's clearly crucial. And I can see that it's clearly wrong. You don't hold on to a vehicle. But it was exceptional and bizarre circumstances. And if he only held on for a few seconds in order to remain upright through that mess, then I'm inclined to sort of give him the benefit of the doubt and overlook it. But if he held on for any length of time, then that's a disqualification offence. I mean, Vincenzo Nibali was disqualified from the Vuelta for holding on to a team car for an extended period of time last year.
Yeah, but again, we don't know, do we? That's the danger of these clips appearing, you know, a handful of seconds of Quintana holding on to the wheel that was on that bike. You know, isn't really enough to draw any kind of conclusion. But just while we're talking about Mavic, a lot of people have also been asking about the Mavic, the bright yellow Mavic bike that Chris Froome rode for a few hundred metres, perhaps, and questions about those. I mean, the blunt answer is that those Mavic bikes on that Mavic car really are there for advertising purposes.
They're never used, are they? They've been there, the same bikes, for 50 years.
I can't remember a time when anyone's really had to use them. Certainly not the yellow jersey on a massive mountain stage. I mean, Mavic are one of the Tour's sponsors and partners. They do provide some neutral service, and they have a range of wheels but really those bikes are not there. You know, there isn't really the possibility to have all of the different size of the bikes, and crucially the pedals that the riders use. Yeah, you'd be up there with five or six different types of pedals.
They'd have been better off on one of our nano folding bikes, or Leos nano folding bikes. It really would have been
seamless.
Plug there for the lovely bikes that
just we're riding. Last couple of things, because we rushed through the tail of the etape a little bit. There's a bit more business to catch up on, because Simon Gerrans was out of the race. I did see him come back to the Orica Bike Edge bus yesterday evening, really battered up. But again, it wasn't a talking point yesterday, but because so much else went on. But it's been confirmed he's broken his collarbone and he is out of the Olympic Games. A few more withdrawals, a couple more withdrawals today. Thibaut Pinot didn't start the time trial because he has bronchitis. And Edvard Toynes of the Trek Segafredo team, he crashed in the time trial and pulled out. And the time trial itself today held in such windy conditions, and winds were gusting at 60 kilometres an hour and often were, you know, 40 kilometres an hour. I was amazed to see riders using disc wheels, and I spoke to Lawrence Ten Dam about a number of things. We'll hear that shortly. But he said he wasn't going for the stage. The priority was to stay upright and have a completely open wheel. And it was interesting to see which riders. I mean, Adam Yates had he had a disc, I think, didn't he?
Yeah, Wout Poels, who I spoke to, had a disc. Shall we hear from Wout Poels? I asked him a bit about the time trial and also about the general atmosphere, because he was part of the Team Sky team last year that was on the end of some abuse from the fans. There are rumours that's been going on again this year, but Team Sky haven't gone public with it. They're keen to address it with ASO rather than make a big song and dance about it.
Yeah, I can understand why they're keen to play that down, but there was an atmosphere at the Chalet Reynard when it was announced that Chris Froome was going to get the yellow jersey. There was some hissing and
a bit of nastiness around the bus as well from people. This hostility towards Froome in particular, if there's not sympathy from after an incident like yesterday, then I'm not sure there ever will be. Now, whether he deserves that or not, I mean, nobody deserves that sort of hostility, but it's clearly a product of a suspicion that's out there about Froome, and that suspicion is generated by a lot of quite influential people in the media and on social media, I think. Who need to be sure that what they're saying is factually correct and that there's evidence for what they're saying, I think, because it's created a real culture of nastiness and, as I say, suspicion around Froome, which, as far as I'm aware, is unfounded. There is no evidence that Froome is a cheat and a doper. No evidence has emerged. If there is evidence, let's have it. This is another issue. It'll be no doubt an issue in the Alps as well. Let's hear from Wout Poels, Chris Froome's Team Sky teammate, at the finish. How was it today, first of all? How big a problem was the wind out there?
Like, really unbelievable. For me, it was quite difficult to stay on my bike at some parts in the downhill, and I was happy that I could control my bike.
You had a disc wheel, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, in the back, in the front, like a lower wheel. But normally in the back, it's like, okay, but maybe it was also for me today better to have like a normal wheel. But like, yeah, the condition was not the most ideal to do a TT.
What was your take on yesterday? Do you think the correct decision, fair decision, was taken in the end?
I think so. If you talk about fair play and you see how the crash happened, I think it was a one and only good decision they could make. And I mean, nobody want to make decisions like that, but also nobody want to have like a crash like that, like with the crowd and a motorbike. So yeah, I think it was a good decision.
How was Chris last night?
I didn't saw him so much. I went straight to dinner and massage, but he was this morning. He looked okay, and hopefully, yeah, he can handle.
He's not got sore legs after the running, has he?
Yeah, I was also wondering that. Like muscle pain, like we never train on that. So, so yeah, we will see today.
Well, you were part of the Tour de France team last year, and there were problems that Sky had with some of the fans. What's it been like this year?
I think the crowd is doing quite okay. Yesterday I had a few more bad things, but you know, I mean, it doesn't matter who you want to support, but if you keep it that, I think they're doing okay.
How does that affect you, though? I mean, as a rider, as part of this team, where there is that sort of attitude from some people?
Yeah, I always try to see it as a compliment. I mean, if they don't support us, then normally we're in yellow, so that's a good sign for us, so... Yeah, you know, it's never nice, but yeah, apparently it's a little bit part of it, so we have to deal with it.
Just finally, the way that Sky have been riding, it seems to have been alternating guys in the mountains. You've been up there, you know, one of the last men some days, and some other days it's been Nieve. Is that a deliberate sort of strategy, this race?
Yeah, it's a little bit like we have a really strong lineup, and Chris has to be good every day, and we can sometimes someone else take it over Like yesterday, it was me, the first week in Nieuwe, and yeah, it's just really nice to ride like that and help each other like that.
So you get days off?
Yeah, like today.
Well, sticking with the Dutch riders, because they've had a heck of a day, let's hear now from Laurens ten Dam about Mont Ventoux, because he featured in our special episode on Mont Ventoux, which we released on Monday. And also, he was talking a little bit about the conditions out on the road today. Laurens, back in March when I spoke to you about Mont Ventoux, you called it a crazy mountain.
Yeah.
It was crazy yesterday.
I was right, no? I think I was right. Yeah, it was even more crazy yesterday. Because all the public, which is normal, stretched out in the last 6K, came to Chaleur Renard, and that's caused the problem. And also the no barrier politics was also a problem, of course. Yeah, what happened is a shame for cycling, no? And also, yeah, then the jury takes decisions, but you never can make it for everybody right. So, big discussion about it. I feel really sorry for my friend Bauke Mollema, of course. Because he's in the form of his life, and then things like that happen, you know. On the other side, I think the jury made the right decision also to put Froome in the same time, because this is crazy. Yeah. But when you see the yellow jersey running on a mountain like the Mont Ventoux, I think it's one for history.
It certainly is. I mean, do you think anything can be done about the crowd when there's that many people on the mountain?
For sure, they have to put more barriers last 2K, which they do normally, like today. Only there was not so many people today, but maybe some, hoe zeg je dat, voorlichting, maybe some, yeah, to teach the people what to do, you know. Also yesterday in the Gruppetto, we got a standstill because of a small crash, because of the public, and then I was with the foot out of the cleats on the ground, and people started to push me, but I couldn't go further. But those people were really drunk. And I think you always have to keep your mind inside. But on the other hand, I wouldn't like to miss the public, because I love it to be cheered for, and that gets the best out of me, you know.
What was it like today? So windy again today. Was it difficult on the time trial bike?
I must admit, the most difficult part today for me was to go from the hotel to the starts, because I still had full disc wheel and everything on the TT bike. Even more wind from the hotel to the start, towards the start, and Mistral was really going in the Provence, and I was terrified to come here, because I was almost blown off the way a few times, but then the TT was okay, it was more comfort. And
Did you just have a disc, you had a full disc in the rear, no?
I had everything full open as possible, because I didn't want to take any risk.
Because it's a day when, with a disc, the wrong gust of wind could cause a crash. We've seen a couple of guys crashing today.
Yeah, they crashed. I don't know. But on the other hand, I think Tom did full disc, because if you want to win, you have to take risk. And I hope he's winning. We'll see.
Okay, so that was Laurens ten Dam. We're going to go to a third Dutch rider now. Incredible.
Wow.
This is a Dutch episode.
We need Dan Hakkenberg back on at
we
some
do need
point
Dan
over the
at
weekend.
Some point. It's all about the Dutch. But Bauke Mollema, fantastic ride today. And he, you know, a couple of years ago, was it 2013 when he was riding really, really well in the Tour? And
well, yeah.
He was sitting second at one point.
Well, ten Dam and Mollema were teammates then.
That's
and
right.
They obviously rode incredibly well on Mont Ventoux that year. Mollema was very good in the time trials that year as well. And so today's result perhaps isn't the surprise.
There was a
surprise.
Very good Dutch Fly on the Wall documentary about the what was then the Belkin team, and it focused a lot on Mollema and ten Dam. And Mollema was looking really good maybe for the podium in 2013. He fell ill in the final weekend, really struggled. This, you know, this is not a surprise to see him performing like this, perhaps. He's not the most elegant-looking rider, but he's very strong and he's going extremely well. And here's what he had to say at the finish. Oh, I should say, before we play this interview, that he featured, of course, in our book club, Kilometre Zero, where he said that 4 or 5 days into the tour, he'd already read two books. He had 4 or 5 more to tide him over. So here he is at the finish today.
I'm a little bit heavier, I think, than some of the other GC guys. And I think I'm used to ride in the wind. Where I live in Holland, it's always windy. So I think it was an advantage for me. It was windy like this. But it was still a really hard time trial, you know. The start was uphill, the finish was uphill. So I think, it may be the best TT in my life. So I'm really happy. No, it's not revenge, you know. Yesterday was another day, and it was hectic. I think I was happy, yeah, even after the crash. You never know how the body reacts, and I didn't feel anything from that. So I was just a great day.
How did you feel last night, Balka, in terms of calming down after the stage and all that happened? Did you find it easy to kind of switch off after all that?
Yeah, it was quite difficult, you know. It was a hectic evening, a lot of reactions, of course, after what happened yesterday, and I couldn't really fall asleep well. I have that often, that I don't sleep so well in the tour, so...
You've got your books to read, of course, as we discussed last week.
This morning, I think I slept 45 minutes, just 2 hours before my TT, so I was relaxed, and that was a good sign, you know. I think I calmed down today and did the recon this morning, and I was really focused on doing a great TT.
So that was Balka Mollema. While we're doing these plenty little interviews, let's hear. I spoke to Marc Sergent, the Belgian this time, director at Lotto Soudal at the finish, just to get his view on. They have the stage winner, of course, at Mont Ventoux, Thomas de Gent, a win that was completely overshadowed by everything that happened. But I spoke to him about whether the right decision had been taken. I also spoke to Valerio Piva, who's the sports director at BMC, about also whether the correct decision had been taken and how his rider Richie Port fared today in the time trial. So here is Marc Sergent, followed immediately by Valerio Piva. It was obviously a very confusing situation. Yeah. Do you think the correct decision was taken in the circumstances?
Well, actually, we were more busy with the stage victory we had. I don't know. It was a hard decision, I think. If you saw the situation like it was in real time, it was correct. Of course, if you see the rules, it's a different thing. But I think if we were in the same situation as Froome, I think, like Brailsford said, it's a human correct decision.
You're a rider yourself, you've experienced these crowds before. Has the situation got worse, and what's the answer?
Well, I think that it's not worse. The only thing was the stage was shortened by 6K, and all the fences were there and not below. So I think that was the big problem. No fences in the last 2-3K, and all the crowds were packed there. There was no more space left.
Are there more incidents of spectators interfering with the riders than in the past, do you think?
Well, you know, a few days ago, Froome hit somebody who ran next to him. I think this should be always messages to the public to do not do that, because it's frightening if somebody crashes next to you into your wheel or hits somebody. So a true supporter, he should stand there and stay put, not running against or with riders.
It was a very complicated day, Essie. Do you feel the correct decision was taken in the circumstances?
Well, something that that a situation like this I never saw, and it's difficult to let the race go like this. So I think the best was to the decision that they do. The three best that was on 1K. The situation was this, and why penalize guys that they are on the ground with a broken bike and. Cancel the stage of start from zero was also not correct. So I think that was the most correct way to make this decision. So of course, maybe Mollema he complained because he had time, but I think win time in a crash, nobody want to have this. So he was there at the top with the best. So he don't lose time, he don't win, but. So that is the way, I think.
I mean, it was quite a nasty crash. Did Richie feel some of the effects of that today, do you think?
Normally not, but today we saw all the GC riders, they have more or less the same time. For me, the reason is the wind. This climber, the guy, they have power in the climb. So in the wind, you need to have more weight and power. So we saw the difference. The heavier guys, they made better time of the climbers. So that is the reason why we saw more or less all the contenders in this position, but lost time from some others. So I think it's nothing changed today.
Well, there's still a lot. No, there's still a lot of climbing, obviously, and we saw the evidence yesterday suggested that Richie is one of the strongest climbers in the tour. Is the podium a realistic goal for him?
That is, a podium is realistic, but of course the last week is very hard, and also the next time trial is very hard. So I think that is for the moment. Froome is dead. We saw a stronger Morema coming up, and for the rest, the contender, they are still in the same position. Richie need to take back this time that he lost the first day with the flat, so he need to try. And of course, the last week is good for him. So the parkour is good for him. So we will see.
Wow, Rich, we're packing them in tonight. Let's talk about the other man of the moment, really, today. Chris Froome obviously strengthened his grip on the yellow jersey, now in a commanding position, and the most likely pre-tour challenger, Nairo Quintana, he hasn't had a good day yet. I mean, he was so quiet in the first week, but he really, when he's needed to do something, he hasn't done anything, and he's lost another wedge of time today. One man I expected to lose a fair fist of time was Adam Yates, not a noted time trialist. I think as a professional, today was the longest time trial he's ever done. I think he did a 34-kilometre time trial in the Vuelta a couple of years ago, maybe last year. Never troubled the top 50. And yet, here he is, I think 18th on the stage. Yes, he lost time to Chris Froome, but very, very respectable performance and still in a podium position at the moment, third overall. So let's just hear a little bit of his post-race reaction. You know, he tells it how it is.
Yeah, today it went okay, really. Everyone knows I'm not great at time trialing, so yeah, I lost some time, but I mean, considering how small I am and, you know, how good I am at time trialing, then I didn't lose too much, so now I'm happy with what I did. It's also probably one of the longest time trials I've done, so on both the climbing sections I felt strong and I felt like I had the power. It was just the crosswind sections and the flat with the rough road where I suffered quite a lot. So yeah, we did the max and we came out okay, so we're here to fight another day. It's a horrible situation what's happened, and prayers and wishes go out to the families of everyone affected, but we had to do a job today and we decided to turn up and do it, so yeah.
So Adam Yates there, the surprise package, nobody, and he said it himself, nobody would have expected him to be in the top three after this time trial, because this final week on paper suits him, but whether he can do it over 3 weeks remains to be seen. He's only 23 years old. I don't know if entertaining is the right word, but he's an interesting interviewee. He says it is what it is a lot. A page out of the Bradley Wiggins kind of notebook from 2012 where he said that a lot.
The tour is a tour.
The tour is a tour. It is what it is. He also talks about we rather than I. Everything is we, which is some riders do that. I get that it's a team effort, but ultimately, the ride that Adam Yates is doing belongs to Adam Yates. Doesn't belong to a whole list of people, much as they have no doubt helped and supported him. It belongs to him. Take ownership of it, Adam, is my advice if you're listening.
Wow.
You're probably not.
Career as a sports psychologist.
No, I think it's psychology to say we, because I think it sort of absolves him of a bit of responsibility in a way. I think, I don't know, I don't like it. Bradley Wiggins does it all the time. It's always we.
I certainly say we when we've made a mistake, and I when we've done something quite good.
Well, we should play out tonight. It has been a sad and somber day, but we all need a bit of levity, a bit of humour in these times, and Lionel kindly provided that last night when he went for dinner, because you were staying on the outskirts of a beautiful, beautiful town of Orange.
Yeah, let me just fill the backstory in here. We were in Orange, which is about an hour and a bit's drive from Mont Ventoux, and our colleague from the Telegraph, Tom Carey, had booked a hotel, but it would have meant we'd all be sharing a room. I mean, I think we'd have been top to tail, Rich, in the same
bed.
On a camp bed. So I decided that the best thing to do would be book somewhere else. So I booked, I won't shame the brand, but a real, real budget hotel out on the outskirts of Orange, next to the motorway. And
first class, isn't it?
I got a text message telling me that the manned reception would be closing. And I've had a disaster with these before, where you go and you have to put your credit card into a machine outside, and it sometimes goes wrong, and then you've got to call a number in Paris, and then they transfer you to a number somewhere else. I could see this happening, so I thought I'll head over there straight away. I drove in through the open gate, the big open gate. I checked in without a hitch, got the code for the car park gate. And planned to drive back into town to meet Richard, Tom, and our friend Simon, the photographer, for a lovely dinner in Orange. Unfortunately, when I got to the entry code thing on the gate, my code was not recognised and the gate wouldn't open. I tried to ring for a taxi, but it being Bastille night, there were no taxis. And so I had to reluctantly concede defeat in my quest to get back into town for dinner. So I walked to the nearby McDonald's, which was about a kilometre away. And when I got there, it was closed, but the drive-through was still open. And so I had to go through the drive-through on foot. And there I was. I placed my order at the first window.
And you were in a queue of cars,
shuffling up between the bumpers. as the car in front moved forward, I walked forward.
Sounds very funny. And you're smiling now, Lionel, but I understand at the time you were.
But do you know the most galling thing? Is it had been such a sort of frantic, chaotic day, and the drive down off the mountain and everything that happened, trying to process what happened and record the podcast and do everything we had to do. It had slipped my mind that we had a folding bike in the boot of the car. I could have just ridden from the hotel into Orange and joined you for dinner, but there we are.
Yeah, and it was a lovely dinner, I have to say. I mean, you could have taken a leaf out of Froome's book and jogged it, run into town.
No, in
your cycling shoes. You know, it would have been the perfect homage to Chris Froome's efforts, which, rightly, I think David Miller paid a sort of tribute to today on Twitter. I think he did what it took to remain in the race. And as absurd and comical as it looked, Froome's run up Mont Ventoux, you look at it and kind of admire it. You can see on his face the determination. And, you know, I think as ridiculous as he looked, he deserves a lot of respect for the way he fought. He was prepared to fight to keep hold of that yellow jersey. We'll move on, and we're moving on towards the Alps. A couple of sort of transitional days ahead of us, or three, in fact, before the next rest day. And, yeah, we should wrap things up for tonight. I think we've covered a lot of ground.
Indeed. Yeah.
So thank you very much, Lionel. Thank you earlier to Francois, who joined us. Always great to have Francois on. Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.